Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back. Welcome to the show. It's Action Movie Anatomy, and it is Wednesday. We're talking about a film we've been talking about doing on the show for like 2 or 3 years. Taylor Sheridan might be the best working writer and now director. His first script produced, Sicario, is coming to you right now.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom!
Oh, I missed it.
Oh, yeah.
I missed it.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Have we been gone for a week?
It's only been 1 week. It feels like it's been ages.
It's been ages.
I'm 30 now.
Yeah.
I'm old.
Drew got old in the time we were gone. Things changed.
Aged.
He's the resident gray hair in the room.
I am. That's why we had to change movies. A Quiet Place was just too scary for me.
Yeah.
Couldn't make it through it.
He wet his pants.
My Depends were ruined, and I had to leave the theater halfway through the movie.
What are Depends?
When you get to my age, Ben, you'll know that they are adult-made diapers. They fit adults instead of, because babies can't wear, adults can't wear Pampers.
Got it.
Okay. Because our bodies are much different than that of an infant.
Hmm. We talk action movies on this show.
Do we?
This is Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies, all things movie-related, and pop culture by the bucketful. And this is the show where we talk action movies that adhere to four basic rules. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Who is the hero in this movie?
First time I've never worn a collared shirt on the show. That is true, guys. Thanks for the observation.
Things have changed in 2 weeks.
Things have changed. I'm old now.
He's going through a midlife crisis. He needs to kind of get younger in his image.
I think the true hero of the film is actually Benicio del Toro. And I think that Emily Blunt is going to be talked about in probably my thesis. Yeah. But I think truly the villain of the film is Brolin. I think the hero is Benicio.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's tough because Brolin's like more of an anti-hero. He's not really a villain.
Yeah, he's like necessary evil. Sort of so is Benicio. It's an interesting triumvirate in that sense. Rule number two, the movie, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people, beings, things, dinosaurs, what have you in the room. Again,
so in that sense, if you go, it's like Benicio is 100% the smartest person in every room that he's in.
Yep.
And I think that Brolin is too.
So if that's the hero and the villain, then the answer is sort of yes?
Yeah, I think so. But it is interesting because it's like they are ultimately working towards the same goal.
Yep. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, or political or mercenary figure.
We got that.
Yeah.
Killer. Police.
She's police.
They're all police.
Yeah. It's totally cool. Rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Yeah.
There's a gnarly explosion in this one.
Yeah, a couple actually.
But
the movie opens with a pretty savage one. This movie's really intense.
This movie is very, very good. And one of the weirdest things about this movie is I don't know why my expectations were so high going into it the first time.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make a lot of sense. I didn't know who Sheridan was. I loved Emily Blunt, but like...
Even Villeneuve.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty unknown quantity at this point.
And especially for this type of film. But for some reason, I remember being pretty underwhelmed. Yeah. Maybe it was because I'd talked to so many people and they were so crazy about it.
I remember seeing the trailers and thinking it looked cool, but it's different, you know. But anyway, guys, there's a lot of things going on here. We are going to talk about that. We are going to talk about the top five directors working under the age of 60. We're going to be talking about, is Benicio del Toro over-sieged, under-sieged, or properly sieged? And we're going to be answering some fun AMA fan questions. If you guys want to follow along in the conversation, you can find either of us. You can find me personally. I'm going to go here at Ben Bateman Media.
You can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter. You can find the podcast on Twitter at AMA Podcast. And on Facebook, we've got the Action Movie Anatomy fan page and the Action Army fan page. The first one is... The first one is dedicated basically to the show.
Yeah.
And the second one is dedicated to our Schmodown personalities as well as this show. And finally, we have...
a Patreon, which we do extra content on every single week. It's the Team Action Patreon. And what we do is we go and set up a big banner. It's the size of a whole wall. It's got Nicolas Cage's face on it. And then we spend about 10 to 15 minutes shooting extra content in front of it, talking about cool stuff. So we saw Love, Simon. We loved that movie. We are doing a little mini AMA on Love, Simon we're going to be posting. You guys are going to see that probably later today.
Yeah, and if you guys care enough or if you guys want it enough, we were going to cover A Quiet Place on this show, but we're not going to. We could maybe even do a mini AMA on that. So let us know if you really are dying to see it. it, and maybe you'll get it.
Yeah, the Patreon. If you donate $1 a month, you get 4 extra videos per month. So it's just me and Drew doing Ben and Drew stuff, but it's not all action-related. It's some schmodown, it's some drama, it's some trailer reactions. We just react to the MI6 trailer over and over and over. We just keep posting that video.
I mean, I saw the newer cut of it in the theater. They only add like a couple little quick... It's not much...
It looks so good.
I am so amped.
Yeah,
so amped. So speaking of the trailer, I think I like the trailer too. Let's jump into it.
Cool.
The State Department is pulling an agent that specializes in responding to escalating cartel activity.
This is not my department.
She does a pretty good American accent. It's a pretty convincing accent.
Very. Yeah.
FBI!
I love them. I am completely so in love with Emily Blunt. Especially after watching Quiet Place and this in the same, like, 36 hours.
The men responsible for today.
The men who are really responsible for today.
And Brolin is perfect in this.
Yeah. We're going to El Paso,
everyone
right?
else.
You're not American.
No.
What do you work for now?
Well, I go where I'm sent.
Welcome to Juarez.
Honestly, I'm pretty excited for the sequel.
I am too.
It looks so really good.
People are killed with his blessing.
First, I didn't like that she wasn't in it.
Right.
But I'm actually okay with it now.
Yeah, after watching it again and seeing the end.
Yeah, it makes more sense.
Makes sense to your American ears.
But in the end,
you will understand.
Spotter vehicle, left lane.
Spotter vehicle, 9 o'clock.
Get your weapon out.
That scene.
That is amazing.
So...
they show it in the trailer?
The fact that they show it, I mean, this has got to be a post.
Maybe.
I'm not a soldier. This is not what I do.
What is what happens when they dig in. This is it.
Gotta be careful on these people.
See, David Oyelowo?
Shit.
I just want to know what I'm getting into.
They will not survive here.
Yeah. This movie's sweet. It's intense.
Yeah.
Freeze!
Good trailer.
You saw things you shouldn't have seen.
I guess Brolin probably is still going to win an Oscar. It seems like.
I think he'll win one. Imagine if he won one for Thanos. How sick that would be.
It's crazy that he still hasn't.
That would be a major mistake.
Feels like he's been A-list and high profile for like 10 plus years now. Like,
yeah, and I mean, he kills it in Milk.
He kills it in
No Country. Like, I mean, but these are the ones that he actually got Oscar attention for.
Yeah,
are those
Milk
roles.
He got an Oscar nom. Yeah. I don't think he did for No Country, but like over the years, he's just been in a lot of good movies. He just keeps being put in big projects.
And he's just always good.
Always.
He doesn't pick... there's probably a bad one in there somewhere that I don't know of, but for the most part, he doesn't.
Labor Day is not my favorite.
Yeah, Labor Day. Right. That's a good one.
He's got a couple bad ones. But that's the trailer for Sicario.
Very good trailer.
Before we fully break down thesis statement, which we're going to be getting into in just 1 second, I do want to ask a quick favor of you guys who are listening and watching. So we have this Facebook fan page.
I can't pay my rent. No.
And the Facebook fan page gets a couple people, 3-4 people a day. Every day. It's got a couple of you guys started this thing like 6 months ago, and it's got like 1,400 people in it now, which is pretty awesome. It's like great interaction. But here's what I'm wondering is when I post something in the group, it feels like we'll get somewhere between like 20 and 50 pieces of interaction.
Right.
But with 1,400 people that are constantly getting added, I'm wondering if it's is it all fake people? Is it all bots? I don't get it. I want to know.
Man, me and my mother have been going around creating Facebook and Gmail accounts. what are you asking?
So I would like, if you're watching or listening to this, go in, the first person who hears this, and make a post that says, hey, if you're an actual fan of Action Movie Anatomy and you watch the show, comment and like.
Yeah.
And just let's just see if we can get a thread going with a few hundred pieces of interaction, because like
and tell us how you watch. Tell us whether you watch it live, you catch up a week later,
do you listen?
iTunes, exactly.
Yeah, because I'm totally I'm like baffled by it. I like don't really know how to.
This is the Action Movie Anatomy Census of 2018.
Yeah. So, we're going to get into thesis statement. Thesis statement is that part of the show where we make a bold statement about the film, a thought you have derived from the
Immediately
movie.
Immediately someone said, I will never have a Facebook. So, anyway, it makes a lot of point sense, too.
Solid. You make your bold...
I'm sorry.
You messed me up.
Let's start it over here.
You in the chat. You did it.
Here we go. So let's get into our next segment, Ben. Yeah. What is that?
It's thesis statement. So thesis statement is kind of your boldest, biggest thought about the film. It's the thing that you would stand up at a party on a soapbox and say, you know what? I'm going to hold court about Sicario. This is the thing about that movie. And I'll tell you what it is for me. Emily Blunt is the best working female action star alive. And this movie, I know, it's a big one. It puts her up against Charlize, who is insane. Mm-hmm. Puts her up against a lot of people. There's a lot of women who are coming up doing great work. Gal Gadot now. But Emily Blunt, to me, is the best for a reason. And it's because she is able to play action and tough, but she's also able to play this, like,
incredibly vulnerable.
And this innocence that makes her, when she gets tough, so much more satisfying. Like, Edge of Tomorrow is her best, in my opinion, mm-hmm. like, just through and through. But even like Quiet Place, which is not really an action movie, but it's a movie where she has to hold a shotgun, and she has to be tough, and she's just so believable as a...
Yeah, that movie's so good.
She's just the best. I mean, honestly, I like Emily Blunt in action roles more than anyone else working today. I think if she can actively take that role on and do that for the next 5 years, I think she is locked and loaded as the absolute premier action star. And this movie just reminded me of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can take her and throw her in anything. I think she's that talented, and I think action and horror is where she might really excel, because after watching Quiet Place, you realize that a lot of the things that make you a great action star will make you a great horror star, too, and that's emoting, I should say, through action and facial expression a lot more than it is just, like, having these incredible words to spout, which Edge of Tomorrow is a bit of an exception.
Yeah.
So this is tough. I have, like, four thesis statements, so I'm just going to rail through the first two really quickly. Roger Deakins is probably the greatest cinematographer alive right now, period. Taylor Sheridan is the greatest living writer of our generation, period. Those are my two just, like, bold thoughts.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
Of our generation. That's what I'm saying, is because this guy's literally, this is his first movie in 2015, so that means he's a baby.
He's not even like our generation. Like our generation, like he's like the next generation. To 14-year-old kids who are like entering high school and watching awesome movies. He's their guy. He's like the. I think when you say our generation, it puts him up against like Sorkin, which is like an unfair comparison.
Yeah, well, it's tough because like Sheridan's probably much closer to our age than Sorkin is.
Oh yeah,
you know that's what I mean.
Yeah,
like our birth generation, our movie watching generation.
I guess when A Few Good Men hit theaters, we were 4 years old. So like that doesn't way out mean Sorkin's not our generation.
Whereas like when we were 25 or 27 is when Sicario hit theaters.
Yeah,
which is much different.
Yeah,
but yeah, I do feel like he's a little behind us. So this movie does not need a sequel.
No.
This is like this movie should have never had one. That's another one that I have, but I'm happy it does.
Yeah,
but I think what my actual thesis is that this is the greatest use of a protagonist to push a story forward without ever having a story arc, which is something that you talked about with me. And she kind of does.
Yeah.
But I also think it's the greatest use of a protagonist to put the audience directly in the movie.
Yeah, right. You are her.
We are her. Yeah. 100%.
Which is a really interesting point about this movie that I didn't realize the first time I watched it. I think the first time I watched it, I walked away from the movie sort of feeling a bit like, huh. What an anticlimactic story. What an out of order, sort of strange story to tell. You don't even realize Benicio is the guy you're really supposed to be following until the end of the movie.
Right.
And then when you watch it again, you're like, yeah, that's because the action that you think you're following isn't the action.
Yeah.
And you realize at the end of it, she has no idea she doesn't know where he goes. She's never going to see that.
She's literally watching a movie. She is us.
Yeah.
She is just put in her seat, and you see it the first time she goes to Juarez, the first time they cross the border. Like, she's just sitting in her seat, like, reacting to things that she has no control over.
Yeah.
So I'll clear it up, and I'll say that this is the greatest use of a protagonist to put the audience directly into a film.
Yeah.
Because, again, like you said, she has no control. She doesn't play by her own rules. She doesn't know what she's doing. She's not the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
And the two times that she actually does kill somebody are both her getting caught off guard and just reacting quicker.
Right.
So she is a soldier, for
totally.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's what they say. But it's not because she's like, Benicio would never be caught in those two positions. You know what I'm saying?
No, never. Yeah, she's great in this movie, and she's great at being, like we said, sort of a relatable action star. I mean, again, I think that's another part of the action star genre sort of that we, in the 80s and the 90s, that they made that transition from, like, Schwarzenegger to, like, John McClane, where it was, like, real guy. This is somebody you're supposed to be able to relate to. He's not supposed to be 250 and 6'4 and just jacked out of his mind. He's supposed to, like, be a cop, and he's a little bit superhero-y, but that's why those characters in the 90s became so relatable. And you look at her, and you're like, yeah, she is an action star. She's quick on the trigger. She's capable. She's a badass. She's, like, willing to sock brawling in the face. Like, she's, like, a badass.
She takes bullets to the chest.
Yeah, but you look at her, and you're like, I would be you in this situation.
Right. If I could pick anyone in that entire movie who I would be,
yeah,
it'd be Benicio. No, it would be Emily Blunt.
Benicio has all the coolest lines.
Oh, he has all the sweet, even from the very beginning, and then like the welcome to Juarez. Yeah. Like even the way they cut it and show this, it's just like he's made to be a badass. So there's two theses,
yeah,
and they're made by two of our regulars,
great,
our biggest fans, but they're excellent. So I want to throw them in there. Keys said that this is the best shot crime thriller ever.
It's so beautiful.
And I might agree. It is incredibly beautiful. And honestly, this might also be one of those things a thesis could be like, this is the greatest use of drones early on.
I was going to say, I meant to look into that. It is 100% drones.
It has to be.
It looks like, I mean, there's so many of those big sweeping landscape shots. Yeah, right?
Which is like, back in the day, they'd have to rent a helicopter every single time to do that.
Yeah.
And they show different angles of them driving through the city. It's like, it has to be drones.
Gotta
That's
be.
The only way. And then the other one is actually from Arena. And it goes with exactly what we were just talking about. This is one of the best examples of the smoothest change of the main character ever in film.
Yeah. It's kind of remarkable. It took me a second viewing a year later or whatever to actually recognize that. It's not her story.
No,
it's really not. But it's also funny because they spend so much time developing her as a character. I think that's ultimately the most dissatisfying part of the movie for me is that when you start to realize that it is Benicio's story, you only get like three scenes with him where you know anything about him, and you don't need to know that much. You know, he has the scene with her where he's like, you remind me of somebody who is very dear to me. He says later, you remind me of my daughter.
Yep.
And then you find out what happened to his family, and it's like, you know, you get a little bit of his background, but like that's about all you get. So he's a tough character to feel like you've just watched his story.
Yeah, it's interesting. You wonder if like a flashback is too lazy to like show what happened to his family. But you do wonder if they took a little bit of the time they spent in building up Blunt and making you feel like her.
Yeah.
If they would have focused a little bit more on Benicio, if he would have just been a little bit more to latch onto.
Yeah.
But I think that he's just badass enough that we're like, yeah, well, I'll go see the second one.
Sheridan really likes to write quietly confident badass dudes. Yes. That's like a thing he does. Because like Renner and Wind River is a very similar character.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that much. He's a more vulnerable character, which I liked about Renner and Wind River a lot.
Yeah.
He gets to have a couple moments where he like breaks, but like Benicio is just like all stoic. So yeah, I love Benicio in this movie. But all right, those are great. Those are great thesi.
Sorry, I had four today.
What's up?
I had four today. I'm sorry.
Four thesi?
Yeah.
So we're going to get into the next part of the show, and that is fist pump moment. This is that moment something happens in the movie, and you're just like, are you seeing this right now? This is so sick!
Yeah.
You can track our thesis statements in a lot of cases to when we either call or text each other during the time we're watching a movie.
Yeah.
That's like, it used to be like a little bit more like celebrated and bigger, but we've done 150 of these now, so like, if you get the text from me, it's probably at the moment that I'm like, this movie's great.
Yeah, I know. When you got the text this morning, I was like, he's watching it right now.
Yeah. Which was like whatever it was, like 7 in the morning or something. That's thesis or a fist pump moment. So we're going to share our fist pump moments on this movie. And I imagine some of you guys in the chat will share yours as well. You probably have similar ones to the ones we have. I think, can we collectively just start with the coolest scene in the movie?
There's like 15 I wrote down, but yes.
So I think that the scene when they're crossing back over the border on the highway has to be that's got to be the most consistent fist pump. Because it's like, the whole situation is so crazy. I'll tell you what it does, though. It illustrates to me just how perfect, like, the difference between Wind River, Hell or High Water, and Sicario, the three Sheridan scripts, three different directors.
What do they call it? The modern Western? Something like that.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't
the
either.
Dark Americas or something. Is that Denis Villeneuve understands how to shoot action in a way that the other two directors, it's literally like varsity and like you just came out of the womb. Like
do you feel that way with Wind River really though? Because remember the Elizabeth Olsen?
I love the shootout. I think it's a great scene. Like I think some of those moments are fantastic.
However, the shootout at the end does leave you wanting.
Yeah,
and we talked about it right when we walked
out. I love
out.
Elizabeth Olsen. Yeah, she has that one great moment in the hallway. Yeah. This like the tension of this scene, the execution.
There's so many times throughout this, or not so many times, but there's numerous scenes throughout this movie where you know that shit's about to go down, and that's what you want to feel in an action movie. You're kind of like, oh man, this is coming, right?
Yeah.
And then also you're like, oh, I hope something is gonna happen, and he always delivers. Because like if they get to the bridge scene and just cross into Juarez, you're like, what? Why am I watching this movie?
Yeah, right.
Back in the States,
then you'd be watching Zodiac.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, like all these things, and I kept finding myself because I didn't remember this movie super well. I was like, something else has to happen, right?
Yeah, right.
And then it does. You're like, yes, every time. Well, I do agree with that.
That scene is so unbelievable. Like she's so out of realm and she's so freaked out. You have that one, the shit weasel with the glasses, and he's totally just like, just a weirdo, you know? He's just like, so super detached, has like no concept of like what's appropriate to say. And Benicio's just quietly just sitting there, just like, I've done this before.
Right.
Brolin's just a cowboy. The whole situation leading up to that scene where they're in the meeting and he's like, you sober? And he's like, we'll be by the time we get there. And he's like, I got a bottle of Johnny Walker in case your hands get shaky. They're just such cowboys, and they get in the situation, and it's just like, oh my God, it's so cool. Like the car on the left, the second car.
So what's your actual, so of that scene, what's your fist pump?
I think it's when she sees the guy, the cop, and she shoots him, and then she's like, fuck!
Right.
She has her moment.
Yeah, her reaction, where she's like, what is going on?
Her reaction to shooting him is probably my fist pump moment.
Right.
I mean, taking out the two groups is pretty amazing, too, because it's like the tactical precision by this team that's just like, if they move a muscle, they're all dead, and it's going to take a second.
Yeah.
No hesitation.
So so that is definitely awesome. I think that was one of the ones in the chat, too.
Yeah.
My two in that are... when Benicio's just sitting there, he goes, take your service weapon out.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yes, it's going down. And then my other one is at the end of it.
Yeah.
And they cut to who? Brolin, sitting in the front seat, chewing on his gun.
Yeah.
Or gum. Didn't even... I wish his seatbelt was still buckled, but it would have been too much. Didn't even move.
Yeah.
Didn't even flinch. Didn't even go for his gun. I just love that he's, like, that much of a fuck, that he's like... well, I'm just going to wait this out.
Yeah. He's pretty excellent in this movie.
He's the perfect cast. Yeah. He's the best cast person in this movie.
In the movie. He's like flawless. He's such an asshole. And you just...
But you get it.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
totally.
Him being an asshole, you're just like, I understand you, but I hate you.
When she first sees him with the sandals, with the flip-flops in the meeting, it's just like... yeah.
Or on the plane when she's like, I thought we were going to El Paso, and he's already sleeping. Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, gotta learn to sleep on planes. You know, actually, my favorite line is from him, and I'll save it for later.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so what you were saying is that you think the collective greatest moment of the movie is that.
I just think it's that whole shootout.
Do you have an actual fist pump of the movie that's different? Or is it the fist pump just the shootout? Because I have a real fist pump that's different.
I'll give you my fist pump that I was going to use as my line, because I have so many favorite lines.
Okay.
It's when they first, it's when Daniel Kaluuya is standing there in the car and they're walking up, and Brolin's such an asshole to him. And he asks a question, and Kaluuya answers, or Brolin answers. Kaluuya's like, what's going on? Brolin answers. And he's like, I didn't ask you. And he's like, yet I answered. And he just walks past him.
I
think that's my fist bump, because I was just like, you're such a prick, and I love it.
Yeah, he's the ultimate prick.
Yeah.
So, got a few, of course. So one of them is when he's like about to torture the dude, and he's like, oh, no hablo ingles. He's like, I got an old buddy that I bet you'll hablo too. And then it just cuts to Benicio wearing a white suit, getting a drink of water.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And then he's like randomly talking to the dude about life and how things have changed. And then he just picks up the 5-gallon jug and walks away.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, so good. So subtle. But my actual moment, and I know it's fucked up. It's the end.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you. If you think it's too intense.
I think that, and I was trying to find a way to put this into a thesis, because I needed more. I couldn't figure out, because I think on Wind River, I said Taylor Sheridan, Wind River is the greatest use of subtlety by a writer ever.
Yeah.
The scene in Wind River, the gnarly scene.
Yeah.
And the scene in this movie, the gnarly scene, he has this incredible way to make you, it's like justified.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
When you watch this scene in the trailer in Wind River, you're like, oh, man, here it comes.
Right.
This is the scene we've all been waiting for. And it's better than we all thought it was going to be.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And at the end of this movie, which you guys are watching the show, so you know, he executes two young boys and an unarmed woman that is all civilians around this man to prove a point. And for some reason, man, I just... It's so good. It's so powerful. And I think it's because every scene that you see with Benicio in throughout the movie, like you said, you don't really get a lot of his backstory, but you just see in his eyes, there's just like, he's always thinking about something else.
Right.
And for some reason, this moment is just, I just couldn't believe it.
I know. It's crazy because you sit there wondering, I couldn't remember if he did it or not.
I
was watching again.
Same. I was like, I'm pretty positive
he kills them all. Yeah. It's that's the thing about this movie. And I think in some ways, one of the reasons that this movie came and went a little bit for a lot of people is that I think it's trying to illustrate something. I mean, that's Sheridan writes from what he knows. So he does a lot of research and then he writes based on what all three stories are about. And this movie is based on the drug trade. It's based on the United States government trying to deal with the drug problem and the savage and brutal cartels. That's like, and it's true to some degree, the way this is all based on the real shit, not the actual story, but the way that it's handled.
Right.
But also the brutality of the story, I think, is just like, he would have to kill the family because they would kill his.
Yeah.
And they have killed his, and they would, and it's like they're complicit because they're part of it. That's just the way you do business in this game.
And the fact that, like, it sounds like Benicio's pretty much works for the Medellin cartel.
Yeah.
You know, so he's like a rival gang member. That's what they would do.
Right.
And the fact that he just shoots them is like, that's the semblance of him that shows the humanity.
Yeah, right. That's the sympathy. That's totally.
That's the sympathetic part.
Yeah, that's the empathy, because like he
instead
didn't
of, like,
dump
torturing
them.
His kids and raping and beheading his wife
and,
front of him.
Right. And
yeah.
then dumping him in a vat of acid.
Yeah.
Like they did to his
God.
Daughter.
Yeah. So that for me, and like, how could you imagine being a writer and being like, this is the scene where I'm going to kill a family in front of a man and not kill the bad guy.
Yeah.
And you're going to love it. And
then he says, finish your meal. But he doesn't actually let him. He just says
no,
it for
he
it.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. That scene's insane. That yeah. scene's absolutely
time,
insane.
When, it's time to meet God, and then he kills his family. It's just like,
yeah.
Unbelievable.
Gut punch. Yeah. Gut punch. Yeah. For completely forgotten that actually happened.
That's why when you were watching the very end of it today, I was just like, I just didn't want to talk
yeah.
at all.
I mean, that's the thing. Is like, so if you ask the question, is it too brutal? I don't know. I'm putting myself solidly at 50-50.
Really?
I don't lean 51% that it's justified, because as awesome of a payoff as it is.
Right. You just killed two innocent children.
It's like unsettling to watch. It's like, wow. Like, that's... And I actually think that that's the biggest reason that this movie came and went for people, is I think
really?
That... I think it was just
But
too,
you and I both didn't even remember that if it did or didn't happen.
Yeah, but I think in some ways when something like that happens in a movie, you walk away from feeling a little bit like, that was a little unnecessary.
You
don't see
head.
Them get shot.
Right.
You just hear it.
And you see them laying on the ground afterwards.
You do see
though,
them laying on the ground.
Which is intense.
Yeah.
Because it's he wants to clarify to the audience. Because
yeah.
a lot of people be like, no way.
Yeah, right.
No way.
Yeah.
You know.
No way, bro.
No way, bro. He just shot near them.
Yeah.
All right, that's a great... You know what? That's great. Everyone that's in the chat, there's a handful of you guys right now. if you're paying attention and if you care, justified or not justified? Hashtag justified, hashtag not. Something, whatever it needs to be, I want to see it filled. I just want to know what the hell you guys think. Maybe I'm crazy.
Yeah. So let's get into the next part of the show. We are going to do star profiles, talk about where these actors were in their careers when they did it. We chose to focus on three today because there's three stars of the movie, truly.
Yeah.
And if you didn't focus on one of them, I think it would feel like a miss.
I put in Brolin last minute. I'm sure you saw that.
Yeah.
And it was because after watching it again, you're just like, how do you not talk about it?
Yeah. So we'll do it a little quickly because we don't want to belabor the point too much. But Emily Blunt had done Into the Woods 2014 on song. Edge of Tomorrow 2014, which obviously we're huge fans of, and Looper in 2012. Now, prior to Looper, she really wasn't doing any kind of action roles, but she holds a shotgun well in Looper, just like she does in Quiet Place. She's great in Armor in Edge of Tomorrow. She's terrific in this. I mean, she's really started to fill that role.
Into the Woods.
Yeah. Is that
Into
a song
the
from the movie
that's
Into
the
Woods?
That's the main song. Benicio, on the other hand, had kind of fallen from the limelight. He did Escobar. Ben and I watched the first 40 minutes of Les Mis the other night, and it was magical.
If I could have only bought the first 40 minutes, I would have, but I couldn't. So
I was like totally into it. I was like, are we just going to, can we finish it? And you're like, no, we're done. We're done. After I Dreamed a Dream, we're done.
All and the best. And then we fast forwarded to
I Dreamed a Dream.
One Day More.
Oh, yeah.
I Dreamed a Dream is early on. One Day More is, it's like towards the middle.
A lot of Jameson. Yeah. All right. So anyway, Benicio had done Escobar, Paradise Lost in 2014, Inherent Vice in 2014, and A Perfect Day in 2015. I only saw Inherent Vice out of those three, and I very vaguely remember that movie.
I still haven't watched it.
So much so that I didn't even remember that Josh Brolin also was in Inherent Vice in 2014. He also did Sin City, A Dame to Kill For in 2014, and I put in Avengers Age of Ultron in 2015, even though he's uncredited as Thanos, just because that's something to talk about.
Yep. So, all right, let's talk about these
so
three
sweet.
Actors.
I had to pull the cable
it's
picture.
Great.
Yeah.
So, Blunt's career at that point, you're like, this is, there's a clear through line of what she's doing here. This moment in Benicio's career, in my opinion, this is the, like, on the comeback trail Benicio moment. Unless I'm forgetting something that happens in, like, 2010, 11, 12.
I think this is the I'm working out at the gym, but no one's paying attention moment.
Yeah, because now, so obviously Star Wars was a big one for him.
Yeah.
And, and this character in Sicario was a really well-liked character, which is why he's getting a sequel that he's basically starring in now.
So interesting. So keep going.
And so he's sort of having, he's in something else.
Guardians.
Oh, yeah, Guardians as well. So, and that's 2014. So that's the same. Yeah. So this is like, this is his comeback trail, like, starting.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Like, he's been doing those Heineken commercials now for a couple of years. He's just back in the limelight.
Yeah.
This is an interesting thing that, and we're going to talk about Benicio del Toro over Overly Sieged, Underly Sieged, Properly Sieged in a few minutes here. So I'll save it before I just go fully into it.
Right.
But that part of his career is fascinating because people don't remember this, but he won the Oscar in 2000 for Best Supporting Actor for Traffic, mm-hmm. very early in his career. I mean, we're going on 20 years pretty soon. So whole different phase of his career now. Last but not least, you have Brolin. And
yes, someone said The Hunted is sweet. It's the best movie he's ever done, actually.
And Brolin, as we said, you can't really look at Roland's last 10 years and in any way say anything other than, like, he's just been solid for 10 years.
Yeah.
Even, like, I saw Only the Brave recently.
Oh, yeah, it was good. You said it was really good.
He's really good in it.
I'm sure he is.
Cable, he's going to be in Infinity War. I mean, the guy is just an absolute beast.
What we've heard, it sounds like him on set in Infinity Wars is just insane. Something that's really interesting in it. Yeah, we got plenty of time. So Stephen Lemieux, who is executive producer and creator, co-creator of this show.
Yep.
Walk in and I'm like, hey, Stephen, have you seen Sicario? He's like, one with the guy from Star Wars? And I was like, guy from Star Wars? He's like, yeah, I was like, Benicio del Toro? He's like, yeah, the guy from Star Wars.
Yeah.
What the fuck is his career-defining role?
Benicio?
Yeah, because for the longest time, I used to say it was Traffic. It was just Traffic, because that was the movie, and that was what he'd been known for. But then he does Guardians, and now he does Star Wars. Now he does Sicario, and he's also the Heineken man. And, like,
I don't think he has a career-defining role. I think if you, even if you said Traffic, I think we're so far removed now that, like, most people you talk to,
I think it's going to be the wolf. I think it's going to be this character by the end of it.
You think
so? By the end, when all's said and done with Del Toro, the fact that he is such a chameleon.
Yeah. If this movie, the Sicario sequel, does well, which I think it's going to, honestly.
Oh, and Snatch. Yeah, Snatch is another huge one that I loved him in.
Yeah. I think that
he dies in like 30 minutes in that movie.
I think that the Sicario sequel is going to do well. I'm pretty sure it's going to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It just, like, seems like it.
It'll make more money than the first one, I think.
Yeah, I mean, people are hyped on it, it seems like. The trailers are doing really well, and that's going to mean they're going to make a third one. And he's going to have been in a trio of films playing this character. And it's going to, I think the second one's already going to feel a little bit more just like an action movie, like
right.
a little less of a drama. And it makes sense because it's going to be directed by somebody who's not like a preeminent genius. And then I think they'll make a third one that'll probably suck and it'll play the character three times. And maybe at that point, you're right. This character will become his career defining role.
So what do you think? Is Benicio del Toro Oversieged, Under Siege, or Properly Sieged?
That's an incredibly difficult one to answer.
And everyone in the chat, too. Hashtag Oversieged, Under Siege, Properly Sieged.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
First, I was going to ask Marissa, because she's up in the booth.
Yeah.
Marissa Serafini. How you doing today?
Gentlemen.
Do you think that Benicio del Toro is overly sieged, underly sieged, or properly sieged?
I think he's properly sieged because the movies that people do remember him for, he was properly recognized, you know, by the Academy, just for the acting and the character roles and stuff. But he's not consistent. I mean, we saw him 20 years ago at the peak of his career, and we're seeing him again now. I don't think he's consistent as an actor in his roles that he plays throughout. But when he has characters that hit, they hit, and then characters that don't.
I think that's actually a really, really great opinion.
I think that's 100% correct.
I'm just gonna agree with you. I was gonna go in one direction or the other, but like, if I call him under sieged, I think that's incorrect because I think
he wouldn't have won an Oscar. He wouldn't have gotten the Wolfman. He wouldn't be able to be a belligerent alcoholic on set for half a decade.
Yeah, and I think if you call him overrated, I think it discredits how fantastic of an actor he is because he's
sure.
really good when he's good.
And if you say he's underrated, it doesn't even fit because he's also, we just said, Guardian, Star Wars, and he's got his own sequel for a movie that didn't require one. So much so that Denis Villeneuve and Taylor Sheridan both wanted to come back for it, but then Denis had to bow out.
God, it almost makes me think that he's under siege at this point. Now that we talk about it a little more, it's almost like, how do you actually have the career that he's had and be as kind of irrelevant as a movie star as he is? He's like kind of an irrelevant movie star, but he's like won an Oscar. He's in Star Wars, Guardians.
But don't you think that's because in the middle of his run, like she said, he went inconsistent and he went lazy?
Yeah, he did get really lazy.
He got really fucking lazy, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see. Marissa, would you mind doing me a quick favor? And while we're talking about this, would you mind pulling up his IMDb and showing me, like, 2001 to 2010?
Because, like, post-Traffic, post like Snatch and Usual Suspects.
21 Grams is great. So he's in 21 Grams. That's like around 2002 probably.
So what about like 2002 to 2010? What happened there?
That's like what I want to see if you go big. All right, so yeah, if you move down here on this list.
Perfect Day.
Yeah, that's this all 2014 stuff. Okay, so yeah, okay, so Dark World. That's all.
Yeah.
Yep. So Savages, right? Yeah. Wolfman. Oh yeah, he's in Che, right?
Wolfman's like one of the worst things ever.
Yeah. Things Are Lost in the Fire. Sin City. Oh yeah, he's in Sin City.
Oh, he's great in Sin City.
21 Grams.
The Hunted is fantastic. The Pledge. Is that the one with Nicholson?
Oh, he just didn't work that much. Honestly.
Yeah, they're really not that bad of movies.
He just didn't work that much. If you look,
I think it's because he for those of you guys that haven't heard, I mean, he likes to drink.
He looks like, honestly, in here, he was taking, like...
Right there.
...years off between movies.
It's where he was there when he did The Wolfman, because I heard that he was unbearable on set, and they had to recut and everything. And then Savages is, like, whatever.
It's like 2011, 2012, something like that.
So he really only takes, like, a 5-6 year hiatus?
Yeah, he's just...
Where he's still working, but just not doing much?
He just could have been... He could have had this moment, like, where he's having all this craziness, all these big roles. He could have kind of done this, I think, like, 7-8 years ago.
But the fact that, like... We're like, oh, yeah, Sin City. We covered that on the show 3 weeks ago, and we were like, oh, yeah, Sin City. And then the fact that I'm like, oh, yeah, Snatch.
Yeah, right.
And I worshipped that movie as a kid. So, fuck. I am gonna stick to Properly Sieged.
Yeah, and I'll go slightly on the... I'll give him Under Sieged. Okay. Slightly. Slightly.
So moving into production development, this is kind of an exciting one for us, just because you and I are both so passionate about these two people.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Taylor Sheridan is a guy who, as we've now mentioned a few times, you know, he was an actor and a writer who wrote a few scripts, and the initial script that he wrote was actually the sequel. Sheridan wrote Comancheria after Sicario. Comancheria sold first, but was stuck in development for quite a few years, appearing on the Blacklist in 2012. It was later retitled Hell or High Water. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So this whole fascination with these three scripts and Wind River, they were all in development, and he sold all of them. He kept Wind River and directed that one himself. But in succession, Sicario came out in 2015, Wind River came out in 2017, and Hell or High Water came out in between in 2016. So his three scripts, 1, 2, and 3... You know what he's doing next that I'm just like, I can't even wait?
Sicario 2.
No, the Paramount Network bought Yellowstone, which is like the Kevin Costner TV series. It looks basically like True Detective with Kevin Costner.
And Taylor Sheridan's writing it?
Yeah.
That is phenomenal.
It's about...
Is Henry Cavill his son?
No. I think it might have already dropped, honestly. I think the first episode might be out. I like haven't watched it yet, but
what's it called again?
Yellowstone.
Yellowstone. All right, I want to check that
out.
I'm
like super, super excited about it.
So you and I had talked about this in the car. And I know I just keep going, but there's so many things. Out of those three, you put Sicario at the bottom.
I think
you need to revisit Hell or High Water.
I've seen Wind River twice. Yep. I've seen Sicario twice. I've seen Hell or High Water once, and it was at the premiere, and I was all... I've said this on the show before, but like a thing that happens to me sometimes, guys, and it's a little better now because I don't work as many premieres as I used to, but like if you do the premiere and go into the screening right after you do the red carpet, you're usually just like hyped and like your brain's been scattered because you're looking on the carpet. Who am I going to interview? So you go and you try to sit down and you try to turn your brain off to focus on the movie. And I've actually found a lot of the time that when I do that, I have a harder time focusing on the movie. It takes me about 25 minutes to like fully like calm down and focus. And I saw Hell or High Water and I probably missed the first 5 minutes of it. And it was at the premiere, so that movie's a little looser in my mind.
Yeah, I remember that one the least. And for me, it's actually at the bottom. And I put Wind River, I think, at the top.
Wind River is definitely my favorite of the three. Yeah.
I really, really love Wind River a lot.
I thought that movie was so good.
Got Chris Stuckman in the chat saying hello.
Hey, what's up, Stuckman?
What's up, brother?
How you doing?
So, moving on to Denis Villeneuve, who is arguably both of our...
I would say Denis Villeneuve, if you were gonna ask, like, if Stuckman's in the chat or anybody, like, of that caliber, people who are, like, doing content, watching everything, critics... If you were to ask every critic we know who is the best, like the hottest director working right now, I think 9 out of 10 say Denis Villeneuve. I think he's pretty much he's the cream of the crop right now.
Yeah, I find that pretty hard to argue with. I think anyone and everyone wants to work with this guy. He's incredibly talented. He's shown that he can do different things. He doesn't just do Blade Runner 2049. He also does Prisoners. He also does Sicario. He also does, you know, Arrival.
It's interesting that though too. So his run as an indie filmmaker starts making Spanish films back in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
He made like an indie in 98, another one in 2000. Films into the mid 2000s. He takes some time off, a short, and then he starts to break through in the States. I think in 2011 he makes a movie called Incendies, which I haven't seen.
Yeah, we really need to see Incendies and Enemies. Or, I mean, Incendies and...
Enemy. Yeah, Incendies is the one that, like, that's on the top 250. It's, like, number 160. People talk about it a lot. But then he makes Enemy and Prisoners the same year in 2013. And Enemy is not regarded as a great movie, but it also stars Gyllenhaal. But Prisoners, obviously, is now, like, an underrated classic. That's in 2013. Then 2015, this movie. 2016, Arrival. 2017, Blade Runner 2049. Yeah. And now he's working on three films. He's working on Dune. He's working on a remake of Cleopatra.
Which, like, when you hear Dune, I'm like, ugh. But then I hear Denis Villeneuve is going to do Dune. I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know why.
That's how you feel about it, huh?
That's how I feel about it.
That's cool. Good for you.
Yeah, no problem. Anyway, that'll do it for me today. I'm just going to step out.
So, yeah, Villeneuve, he's just that guy. He's French-Canadian. You know, he has won the Canadian Screen Award for Best Direction 4 times.
He will win Best Director
100%
within the next 5 years, I bet.
Yeah, he's like, yeah. So this begs the question, you know, you and I started a conversation last night about this.
Yeah.
When you talk about the best working director, right?
Yep.
And this is a question that was asked in the AMA questions, you know, Paul DeNuzzo.
I don't know if you guys
we salute you.
Yes,
we salute you, General. He asked the question, where do you rank Villeneuve in respect to the current working directors? So, because this conversation's so hard, as we've covered Nolan movies, we've covered... What we had to say was...
It becomes just like an art... It's just like, I want to yell at you about why I think Spielberg is, and you want to yell at me why you think Martin Scorsese is, maybe.
So it's a generational thing for us. So we looked at all of the directors that are on that all-time list, and we decided we're going to make the cutoff 60 and younger.
Mm-hmm.
Because it surprised both of us that Villeneuve and most of these guys are over 50.
Yep.
They all seem like they're in their like early 40s to me.
For sure.
But they're... So the rule is under 60, and we both made a top 5. Did you rank yours?
I didn't put them in order. Did you?
I ranked my 5.
I don't know if I can.
I can start with my 5.
Do you have an honorable mention or no?
Yeah, I have 2.
Who are your 2 honorable mentions?
My honorable mentions are Jeff Nichols. So that's the guy that directed Mud, Midnight Special.
Yeah.
He's like a super quietly killing it right now director who... He's kind of like Scott Cooper, but I like him a lot more than Scott Cooper because I think his movies are a lot more unique.
Right.
He's just doing really great stuff. Jeff Nichols is one of those guys that if he's got a movie coming out, go see it. The other one that I wrote down is Edgar Wright. I think he deserves an honorable mention because even though he's worked primarily in a genre that doesn't lend itself as much to being recognized for like great filmmaking, Baby Driver is a masterpiece. And he's great, but he didn't make my top 5. So
yeah, I love him.
Those are my 2 honorable mentions.
My 2 honorable mentions are Rian Johnson.
Yeah.
Of course, you guys know how much I love him.
I love Rian Johnson.
I love Looper so much.
For the record, we both love Last Jedi, in case it's like your first time watching
or listening.
I
really like The Last Jedi. And my other one's Ben Affleck. Because I was going back and I was thinking about what Affleck had done. I was like, man, I love The Town. I really like Argo.
Yeah.
You know,
Gone Baby Gone.
Gone Baby Gone. I like more than, you know, Gone Girl, which...
Live by Night.
One of my favorites. All right, I think I put them in order, and it's so crazy.
It's a hard order
to me.
Are you ready to go to countdown? We'll take turns.
Who's your number 5?
My number 5 is Alejandro González Iñárritu. So this is he's won Best Director
really?
In 20.
But is it? But you were like whatever about The Revenant.
I think The Revenant's totally good. I think that movie is like not something I'd want to watch again. I think it's a little overrated. Mm-hmm. But that's not his only movie.
I think Suarón's better.
He's amazing.
Yeah, no.
Revenant, Birdman, and then you start to go back to his older movies, and it's like 21 Grams and Amoros Perros, and like those movies are unbelievable. Are you gonna say something?
No, I'm not.
He's amazing. I just think that what he's capable of doing and what he's done as a director is like pretty unbelievable. I mean, everything he does is like unique and dark and fascinating and interesting.
So, can I ask you about this list?
Do you want me to say his name again?
I want you to say all the movies that he's directed in Spanish. Does what decides this list? I think, and I'm going to just throw this out to the audience as well. I think in making this list, the way that you truly decide it is if this person and these movies didn't exist, what would kill you the most? Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. If you never saw any of these movies.
If this movie did not exist, but you knew of it.
Okay.
So like, let's say
yeah.
Gladiator came out and then it was taken away from me.
Yeah.
And I could never have it again. Like that type of thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
So
God, that makes making this list so hard.
It's impossible.
And so guys, this is a fun one for you guys in the chat. If you want to leave your thoughts in the chat, or if you want us to 100% be able to see it and respond to it, either leave it in the comments after the video is done, post it in the Facebook, or tweet at us. If you want to tweet at us, that's a fun way to do it.
Oh my God, dude, I can't. Okay, so I think I just got to shut up and just do this. So number I think five. At number five, I'm going to put Mr. Danny Boyle.
Yeah, he didn't make my. I love Danny Boyle. You know I love Danny Boyle.
Like, going back and looking, like, The Beach is like his. That's like one of the worst movies he's done. His magnus opus. You got Trainspotting.
Yeah.
You got
28 Days Later. 28 Steve Jobs.
Yeah, Steve Jobs. Slumdog Millionaire. Sunshine. Like, those movies are incredible.
Yeah, he's amazing.
So I got to put him. Fuck. At number five. Yep.
My number four is Kathryn Bigelow. From Point Break.
Just from Point Break to Near Point
Dark,
Break
to Zero Dark 30 to The Hurt Locker. I mean, she is an unbelievable. Even Detroit, which was difficult to watch, it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, if you're asking me the one that would kill me the most, it's her, because she directed Point Break, and it's my favorite movie ever made. But
for sure.
More than that, it's just, I think that the variety of movies she's made for so many years, and she's been so proficient, and she's also changed genres a little bit. She's gotten better. I think she's an unbelievable director. So she's number four.
This is the hardest. Like, that's why I went back and forth with you so many times on the phone this morning. I was like, I want to just do three.
Is Bigelow actually under 60? I want to check that.
I wasn't sure. I actually looked her up thinking that you might use her, and I was going to look up her age, but I was like, there's no way he's going to put on her list. Because you didn't really like – I didn't think you liked Zero Dark Thirty and Hurt Locker that much.
Love those. I mean, Zero Dark Thirty next to Point Break is my favorite.
Okay, so at me, number four is David Fincher.
Oh, I don't think I can use her. 1951. Yeah, she's too old.
She's too old.
Yeah. Okay, stricken from the record. So I gotta.
Danny Boyle.
No, I don't think. I don't think I'm gonna do that. Go ahead, keep talking.
Fincher. I mean.
Oh, Fincher's your number four.
Fincher's my number four.
Wow, that's
and I
low.
Think this strictly goes with how excited I am about the next movie he's gonna do.
Yeah.
If I could live without Fight Club.
Yep.
And how much these other movies mean to me from these other directors. Putting David Fincher at number four is. Incredibly hard. And I actually like Danny Boyle more than David Fincher.
Yeah.
But David Fincher's a better director.
So I'll save my thoughts on Fincher because, spoiler alert, he's on my list.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm recently completely obsessed with David Fincher.
Yes, you are. What's your number four? Three.
Actually, it's going to be my number five because I have to get rid of Bigelow, so I can't use her. So my number five is Paul Thomas Anderson.
Which is funny because he actually almost was my number five.
He just... only missed my list in terms of ranking because I think that the problem with him is that he peaked in the first half of his career so completely, and the back half of his career, in my opinion, has been so much less exciting. Like, The Master, I like a lot, but I also think it's like just a kind of like it's a slow movie. It's not as satisfying. I never saw Inherent Vice, but I've heard it's damn near unwatchable. I liked Phantom Thread a lot, but
it is very close to unwatchable.
Yeah, I don't think Phantom Thread is like a masterpiece. I think it was a little overrated. I love him. He's my single favorite director of all time.
So Paul Thomas Anderson is my number three.
Okay.
And for me, he's like my favorite all time too. We always say this. We're like Danny Boyle and Paul Thomas Anderson are our two favorite directors of all time.
Yeah.
But it's tough when you look at their catalog. And now while I agree he peaked in high school, I don't think that he can't do it in his professional career as well. Like,
I agree.
In the sense that like he actually wrote his first script when he was 18, and he started writing Boogie Nights when he was 18.
I think he's the youngest director on this list as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is as well. And like I think that he can still come back and win a Best Director, maybe in his 50s, maybe in his late 40s. I think that the guy's potential is still so high that I put him above those other two guys.
It's crazy that Tarantino's not on either of our lists.
Yeah. It's because of just Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Like, if he only did Boogie Nights, he might just be number one on my list.
Don't underrate Magnolia.
Right, but what I'm saying, though, is if he had only done just those two movies, then he would be, like, probably much higher on the list.
Yeah, I think, and There Will Be Blood's amazing, but, like...
Oh, actually, fuck, I love There Will Be Blood. I love There Will Be Blood. Yeah, I like it much more than Magnolia, actually.
Yeah.
What's your number two, then?
So, five, my four. So, my three
Can you just give us your five, four, and three again?
My five is Paul Thomas Anderson. My four is Alejandro González Iñárritu.
Perfect.
And my three is Denis Villeneuve.
Okay.
So, that's where I put three. I look at what he's done, and I'm so blown away by it. It's so impressive to me.
Yeah.
He's not the top two because he only has done like a few movies, and those movies have been great, but like he also has only been making American movies that we've watched for 5 years, which is prolific, but as we've seen from these great directors, you can have a prolific run and then you can fall off a little bit. I also think Sicario is really good, But I think Sicario's a little overrated. Like, it's, I think this movie's great, but it's not like a masterpiece by any means.
Right.
So he's got basically at that point Arrival, Prisoners, and 2049. And those are all great movies. And I haven't seen Incendies, which maybe if I had, he'd be higher. But he's my number three.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me.
Yeah.
God, this is so hard because my one and two are your one and two.
No, you've got to
be.
Maybe. Wait.
Because my five is Boyle. Four is Fincher. Three is Anderson.
Yeah.
So my number two is going to be Christopher Nolan.
That's your number two.
I think he is. I think Christopher Nolan is my number two, and the reason for that is I feel like he's losing sight quite of like what made Begins and The Prestige and The Dark Knight and Inception so great when I go and watch Interstellar and I go and watch Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Now, I know they're different movies, and you know, Insomnia's in there and Following's in there, and I mean his filmography is almost perfect.
Yeah.
But I don't get as excited about his movies as I used to.
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
And like now when a Christopher Nolan movie comes out, it's not even because he's made many missteps. It's just because it's like, I want to see you do something like Inception again.
Yeah.
And like while Dunkirk was incredibly brilliant, I would have believed a bunch of other directors could have done that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like Spielberg at his prime, Spielberg in 98 doing Saving Private Ryan is better than Dunkirk will ever be.
So
in
Nolan's
2017.
Also my number two.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And then your number one and my number one are both on the same list because...
No.
Yeah.
You said you know what my number one is because I haven't
said it's Fincher and mine's Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Denis Villeneuve is my number one.
You think he's the actual single best working filmmaker today?
I am more excited about anything that he does than anyone else on this list. The way that he does his movies, the movies that he's done in the... Because in the last week I've watched... Or in the last 2 weeks, I've watched Prisoners, Arrival, and Sicario.
Yeah.
And I watched Blade Runner. Blade Runner was my favorite movie of last year.
Yeah.
And, like, the ability to do what he did with Blade Runner, which was a franchise I didn't even care that much about.
Yeah.
And it made me fall in love with the original again.
Yeah.
Like, all of these things. I just have to go. Denis at number one, Nolan at two, Anderson at three, Fincher at four, and Boyle at five.
I was so close to putting Nolan at one. So
I know,
close.
Same. That's the same.
I put him at two, and I'll explain exactly why. And it's a combination of what you said, which is that I think I love parts of Interstellar, and I love some of Dunkirk. I really like Dunkirk. And I love a lot of Dark Knight Rises, all three of those movies. I feel like all three of those movies are good to great. None of them are like a masterpiece.
Right.
And that's his last 7 years of movies. So like his ability to come out with a movie next year that would blow my mind and be in my genre again, totally there. But it's been 7 years.
Yep.
Eight years.
Yep.
Okay. Fincher, on the other hand. and for the record, some of you guys who follow Nerds
and Suits.
For the
record, I would sleep with Fincher if I could.
If you guys follow Nerds and Suits, you know I've been going back and rewatching every Fincher movie. So I've now gone back through eight of them. The only two that I haven't gone back to yet are Alien 3 and The Game. But I've watched all the other eight. And what I have found is David Fincher's recent career, I like more than his early career.
Which is like a travesty because so many people are like, but Seven? And but Fight Club?
Right. Yeah. People are always like, Seven and Fight Club, he'll never be as good as that. And I'm telling you, I even just watched The Curious Case of Benjamin Button again.
Oh, I did. I watched the first half of it.
That's not the best half. The
no,
second
I know.
Half's better.
I wanted to wait to get into the good part.
And I honestly, that's 2008, Zodiac's 07, but Social Network is his best movie. That's 2010. Same thing with Nolan. They have their best movie the same year in 2010. But then his movies after, Dragon Tattoo is really good.
I love Dragon Tattoo.
And Gone Girl is criminally underrated. That movie is so good.
It's almost as good as Gone Baby Gone.
So I think that David Fincher is the best working filmmaker today. It's maybe Villeneuve should be higher for me, but I look at Fincher's career and I'm like, wow, you made arguably your two best movies in the first 8 years of your directing career, and you've made what I think are arguably, I think you've made your best movie later in your career, but I think he's still just knocking out of the park. I think you could argue that Gone Girl is his like third best movie. You could totally make that argument if you wanted to.
Yeah, I could see that. It's funny because almost every single person has Villeneuve, Nolan, Fincher, and Boyle on their list.
Yeah, right.
We obviously the Tarantino lovers out there. Damien Chazelle is on there as
incredible.
Well.
Yeah,
he's good.
The only reason
he hasn't done enough. Though.
The only reason Boyle didn't make my list in the end is when I thought about Danny Boyle.
Oh,
I was
obviously
like,
Guillermo.
Yeah, I'm not a love Guillermo. He's not my favorite.
Ryan Coogler.
Yeah, Oh, Coogler's great.
Yeah.
The big issue for me with Boyle is that though I like Boyle's best movies, even his best movies to me usually feel like I'm championing something that's underrated. There's always like a feeling with his movies that like he's only got one or two blue chip movies and all the rest of them are like trying to convince people why Sunshine's so good. And it's like, it's always a little bit like he makes really above average movies, but he also makes some really shitty movies. Like Trance is not good. That movie sucked.
Yeah.
Like he's made a couple of those.
That's why in making the list of the greatest director of all time, you have to look at their entire filmography because like, you know, when we were doing that segment we did a couple weeks ago, the What Were You Thinking, Man?
Yeah.
It's really hard to put the greatest directors in there. It's hard to throw Scorsese and Spielberg and Nolan and even Kubrick. Like,
yeah.
It's really hard to pick a movie where you're like, it doesn't make sense. Whereas, like, you look at Boyle and Anderson and you're kind of like, huh.
Yeah, Fincher's like Panic Room. Huh.
Yeah. But then, and you know, he was young, new in his career. Anyway, so we're running really short on time.
But we wanted to have that conversation.
Yeah, so that's a very important conversation to have. And it was very enjoyable.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Where does Sicario rank among revenge movies? Asked from Ross Elliott on Facebook. My favorite revenge movie of all time is the original Old Boy. Ben, what is yours?
I know we did this on the show.
I know we did. That's why I'm just going to do this.
And I can't remember now. I really like John Wick, I remember. There was a weird choice that's like...
Unforgiven?
Maybe. Yeah, that sounds right.
That was what yours was.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Unforgiven's a freaking... And Gladiator's a revenge movie, too.
Gladiator's
amazing.
Moving on over... yeah, I mean, do you want to do this, the three categories?
I think we should... Let's just breeze through financial really quick.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, I forgot. We totally skipped that. Yeah, so this movie was produced by Lionsgate and distributed by them. It cost $30 million to make, and it was released in September on the 18th of 2015. It grossed $46 million domestic for an additional $37 million foreign for a grand total worldwide of $84 million, which was deemed a massive success for them. They did not expect it to make that much money. It had a soft release, I think, in like April or something, something crazy like that. And then it opened wide, like I said, in September. And it was third place. It was at $12 million. It was behind The Martian in its first week at $54 million, which is like... sometimes I really underestimate the superstar power of Matt Damon.
Yeah.
And then the second one, Hotel Transylvania 2 at $33 million, just... destroying it.
Do you know who plays the main voice of what is it, Dracula in that movie?
Yeah, Sandler.
Yeah, okay, sweet.
Yeah. It's my favorite movie of all time. IMDb gives it a 7.6, which I actually think is kind of low for this movie.
That's about right to me.
And all critics on Rotten Tomatoes give it a 93. Give it a 93, and the audience gives it an 84.
That's so curious.
I see it more as like an 84.
I think you can't watch this movie and give it a below average rating, which is, I think, why it gets such high numbers. Uh-huh. If I watch this movie, even if I was like a little underwhelmed by parts of it, I'm not going to give it a rotten. There's no way. Of course this movie's fresh. This is like quietly one of the most like... It's like sort of one of the most like overrated, like really good movies I've ever watched. It's like there's no part of me that's like this... There's parts of this movie that are bad. There aren't. It's right. Just a little bit... It's just a little bit like forgettable in a lot of ways to me. That's like my biggest knock against it. So 84 is like a little high. It's like 80 for me.
All right. What about the three categories, man? Does it?
Well, I think we have one last thing left to do. I want to just knock out really quickly because a favorite line.
Oh, there's your sweet Jesus, favorite line. I can't believe I skipped that. All right. Sorry.
So we are going to talk about favorite line in this film really quickly before we do the pitch.
And I'm
going to
say this really quick because I know it's not yours, but both of our favorites was, you're asking me how a watch works. For now, let's just keep our eye on the time.
Yes.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Really
that's interesting. That's one. A high on the list one for me. Mm-hmm. I really, really love that that line. Benicio is just so cool. I was going to use the... I was going to use the Brolin line that I told you about.
Oh, I thought you
wasn't
were
asking
to.
You. Well, I used it as my fist bump.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wasn't
sorry.
Asking you. And he's like, yet, and yet I answered.
And yet I answered.
It's pretty great. Yeah, I mean, I think there's like, you know what? Just because we're running short on time, I'll use the combination of those two as my favorites. Because that was the other one that I wrote down. There was a couple other super, super sweet ones. I also love when Benicio's sitting at the table at the end. And he says, every night you send men to kill families. And here you dine with yours.
Yep. Yep.
And here you dine. Yeah.
Yeah. And here you dine.
That's a pretty sweet
line. Welcome to Juarez is one of my favorites. Yeah. And then I think it was the other. Oh, it was the other one. It's another Brolin line. What do you keep looking at me for? No hablo inglés, remember? After he starts getting And I also love that Benicio just like, it doesn't ever show him torturing him at all. It just shows him walk up to him and pretty much just stick his dick in his face.
In his face, yeah.
And it's just like. Again, brilliant directing and writing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Just like try to just denigrate the guy.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do that for us. So we are going to get into the three action movie categories, which feels a little unnecessary, but I think it's important to run through them.
Yep.
There are three action movie categories: totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. Totally legit movies are like, you know, Lone Survivor or Gladiator.
Or this.
Ridiculous, totally ridiculous. That's a Con Air, Face Off, Demolition Man. And ridiculous, legit's the middle category where you kind of laugh a little bit unintentionally, but it's really awesome in one way or another. So Point Break, Predator, John Wick. I think that this movie has to just be totally legit. I can't see a world where it's not, right?
Yeah, it's totally legitimate. The only thing that I do want to say really quickly is this movie was released in 2015, and the mayor was very unhappy because as of his election in 2010, he said that Juarez had drastically changed, so the depiction of this movie was negatively received by some people in that community. I just want to throw that out there because it just needed to be said.
Yep.
The other line that's really sweet is, you are not a wolf, and this is the land of wolves.
And this is
the
land of wolves now. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
We have one more thing, Ben.
Yeah, we have something called The Pitch! Alright, so I think the deal with The Pitch is we have a couple options.
Well, we're going to Rampage in like 3 hours.
Yeah, we have a press screening of Rampage at 7, so...
That probably won't happen.
Yeah, probably not gonna be good. We'll see. If not Rampage, there's a bunch of stuff now on the horizon. We're like entering summer season, so... We're around the corner from Infinity War and Han Solo.
Soldado.
Yeah, there's just a ton of movies coming up over the next 8 weeks. So many. Probably a lot of new releases. We have some, I think at least one general that we haven't done their movie yet. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure if we have a general. I know Danuzzo did it again, and I believe. And then we have a new Commodore, so we have to get that call in for, which I'm assuming if it's in the next month or a few weeks, it's probably going to be for Infinity Wars.
Yeah, exactly. So go check that out. Check out the Patreon, guys. Brand new content coming out there every single week. We've got stuff coming out today. But I think probably it's either going to be Rampage or it's going to be a poll. So just pay attention. Go to the Facebook. Check us out on Twitter. You can find the Twitter at AMA Podcast. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media.
And you can find me at Andrew Guy.
And that's going to pretty much wrap us up for the day. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks for watching. Marissa in the booth, thank you for everything you do.
Bye.
Thank you, gentlemen.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.